आत्पोपम येन सर्वत्र समं पश्यति अर्जुन सुखं वा यदि वा दुःखं स योगी परमो मतः। We are reading this afternoon from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text number 32. Translation: He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress. O Arjuna. Purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God, and the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being. Krishna is the proprietor of all lands and planets. The perfect yogi is the sincerest friend of all living entities. He knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subject to the threefold miseries of material existence due to his forgetfulness with Krishna. Because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world, and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Natasmat kaschid me priyakrit tamaha. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities. And in this way, he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. Translation: He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress, O Arjuna. It is said, in the Western world, the golden rule. Do you know what is the golden rule? The golden rule is, do unto others as you would have them do to you. Of course, I met one sadhu who told me that this golden rule, do to others as you would like them to do to you, that is for the golden age. But in the iron age of Kali Yuga, a more practical rule is do not do to others what you would not want them to do to you. This is a symptom of one who has advanced in spiritual life. The great devotees, it is said that they are paradukaduki, which means they have become selfless. In the service of the Lord, they are willing to tolerate anything. Krishna says in the Gita, matras parashastu kunteya sitoshna shukadukada agamapayano nityas tamstatikshasva bharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and its disappearance in due course of time, arise from sense perception only, O Skyan of Bharat. They appear like the winter and summer seasons. Therefore, a wise man, he tolerates without being disturbed. He tolerates the happiness that comes into his life, and he tolerates the distress that comes into his life. How does he tolerate? He knows that his purpose of life is the service of the Supreme Lord. And anything that comes his way in regard to that service, he becomes indifferent. Whether he is praised or blamed, whether he is understood or misunderstood, whether he is in pleasure or pain, health or disease, he tries to do best only because in a healthy body, in a respectable position, you can oftentimes do better service. But his concern is simply the service rendered, not the result. So therefore, a devotee becomes very selfless and indifferent to what Krishna so kindly offers him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Marobira Kobi Chohi Chatoha Nityata Sa Prati Tua Adhika. That my Lord, Sri Krishna, if you want, you can kill me. If you want, you can protect me. You have every right to deal with me in any way you please, but just know that I am your eternal servant. If you actually accept the position of service, then you will allow your master to deal with him, with you, however he pleases. But as long as you want to be the master, you want to be the controller, then you are very choosy about what comes or what does not come. So a devotee becomes very selfless, but he becomes very extremely sensitive and conscientious toward the betterment of others. To see distress in his own life, he accepts it as God's grace and becomes very ecstatic. But to see distress in another's life causes grieving in his heart. You see, until we become selfless to our own selfish desires, we cannot truly give of ourselves for the welfare of others. And it describes here that such a person, he sees all living beings equally, because he has no motivation. If you're motivated, certain people you will want to help, and certain people you will not want to help. In fact, certain people you will want to harm. But one who is in purified consciousness, he sees every living being equally. Whether the person is literate or illiterate, rich or poor, man or woman, Hindu, Christian or Muslim, whether that person is Indian, Pakistani, Russian or American, he is the true friend and welfare worker for everyone, because he sees the soul in everyone's heart. This is the natural symptom of one who is spiritually advanced. And people ask, how do you know who is spiritually advanced? Not someone who just preaches nicely. Anyone can preach nicely if they have a good education. Huh? But someone who lives, preaches and lives according to this principle, who is genuinely concerned for the welfare of others. And a supreme welfare is to bring one to the state of eternal consciousness in the loving service of the Lord. Therefore, Anyone who has these qualities should be considered to be the shelter for all living beings. It is said, there is a verse, in this verse it describes Acha, what is that? Acha Vishnaloshi Gurushu Shiladira Vaishnavi Jati Budhi. That one who sees the deity in the temple to be made of wood and stone. One who sees the spiritual master as an ordinary man, or one who sees the Vaishnav to belong to any caste, nationality, or creed, such a person has hellish mentality. One must understand that anyone who is sacrificing his life, anyone who accepts the lotus feet of the Lord upon his head, that person is above all the designations of this world. Why? Because he no longer sees according to the designations of this world. One who discriminates according to a particular person's designation, that person has material consciousness. Therefore, that person, by his own consciousness, belongs to a particular section of society. But one who no longer sees according to these sections of society, one who sees the equality of all living beings, by his own vision, he is transcendental to all those designations. And the great acharyas, this was the principle that they lived by. In fact, yesterday was the appearance day of Srila Ramanujacharya, one of the great, great spiritual masters of the world. In fact, he is the founder of one of the four principal Vaishnav Sampradayas. I would like to speak just one drop from the ocean of the glories of this great Paramahamsa Vaishnav, highlighting this particular aspect of his personality, of how he would see only the quality of devotion in a person's heart. It is described that there was a disciple, one of the principal sannyasi disciples of Srila Jamunacharya. His name was Saila Purna Maharaj. And he was a very great preacher of bhakti, or devotion to Sri Krishna, Narayan. Now, Saila Purna had two nieces. One's name was Kanti Mati, and the other's was Deepti Mati. They were both very religious and pure in heart. And Kanti Mati was married to a very great devotee of the Lord. His name was Keshavacharya. And they wanted very much to have a child. But many, many years went by, and they were not able to have a child. So Keshavacharya, he was very famous for his performing of fire sacrifices. So he took his wife to the holy place near Madras, where the deity of Parthasarathi resides. It is close to the ocean. Today, if you go to Madras, the principal temple of Krishna is Parthasarathi Mandir. So before the murti of Parthasarathi, he performed a sacrifice and prayed that a noble and virtuous son would be born, who would broadcast the glories of the Lord throughout the world. And soon after that, a beautiful child was born. When Shailapurna found out about this, he came to that place and he named the child Ramanuja. Ramanuja, from his very childhood, displayed all the qualities of a great devotee. He was always very gentle, always very humble, very obedient. In his school, he would very quickly learn all of his lessons, and he was always attracted to the association of sadhus, and he was always very attracted to hearing and chanting the glories of Narayan. I believe when he was about 16 years old, he was married to a very, very beautiful girl. Her name was Rakshakambala. It is said she was beautiful like an apsara, and she was very gentle and very chaste. And she was coming from a very, very distinguished Brahmin family, as was Ramanuja. They were living in a city called Bhutapuri. 6 months after the marriage, the father of Ramanuja died. So Ramanuja, not liking to be there any longer, he shifted their residence to the holy city of Kanchipur. Now there was one very, very great devotee who was living in Kanchipur. His name was Kanchipurna. He was born of a Sudra family. But how much love he had for Krishna. In Kanchipur, there is a very famous deity of the name Varadraj. Today, you can go and visit this beautiful temple. It's a very big and beautiful temple. And Varadraj has been worshipped by great saints since time immemorial. He is a deity of Lord Narayan. So Kanchipurna, he had a very, very personal, sweet, loving relationship with Sri Krishna. And every day he would fan the Lord and sing beautiful songs in his glory. And it is described that whatever needed to be known by the people in general, Varadraj would confidentially speak to Kanchipurna to relate it to others. So he was very advanced and very pure in heart. So one day he was walking and he happened to meet Ramanuja, who was a young man. And Ramanuja, seeing the beautiful devotional qualities of this great soul, invited him to his house for prasad. So after Ramanuja personally fed him nice prasad cooked by his good wife, Ramanuja sat him down to massage his feet. And Kanchipurna became very embarrassed. He said, "Ramanuja, you are a very, very learned man. I am not well educated." He said, "You are born in a very high-class Brahmin family, and I am only a Sudra. Therefore, how can I allow you to massage my feet? I should be massaging your feet." And Ramanuja, with great sincerity, he replied. He said, "If my being born in a Brahmin family creates such pride in my heart that I cannot render service to the great devotees of the Lord such as you, then I consider being born a Brahmin the most inauspicious thing." He said, "Whatever birth one has, if one has love and devotion to Sri Hari, that person is the only real Brahman. When Kanchipurna heard how Ramanuja understood the glories of pure devotion, he became very satisfied. And on that day, they became best of friends. In fact, they sat throughout the day and throughout the night simply discussing Krishna's lila and the glories of pure devotion. And then they would meet regularly. Ramanuja would seek out Kanchipurna whenever he could find him, just to sit and discuss Krishna consciousness with him. Especially in those days when the impersonal school of philosophy was so rampant everywhere, it was very, very difficult to find even a single pure devotee of the Lord. So one day, Ramanuja, he went to Kanchipurna, who was in the Varadraj temple, and he invited him to his house for prasad. In Kanchipurna, he said, "How can I take prasad always at your house?" He said, "I am very low, you are very great." But Ramanuja insisted, "No, you must come, you must come, you must come." So Kanchipurna, he said, "All right, I will come." So Kanchipurna knew that Ramanuja was going to come to his residence to bring him to his house. So not wanting to be embarrassed by all these formalities, Kanchipurna waited till Ramanuja was on his way to his house, and he went another way to Ramanuja's home. And when he arrived, Ramanuja's wife, Ramanuja Acharya's wife, he said, "My husband has just gone to get you. You sit and wait for a few minutes, and then I will serve you prasad." He said, no, I am in a very great hurry. I promised to come here for prasad, so I have come. But I have very urgent business. I have to be in the temple to do my puja. Please, if you want to give me something, give me now so I could go." So she fed him very nice, whatever was prepared. And then what she did, after Kanchipurna finished, he was so humble that he took cow dung and water and washed the place where he ate, and then he left. And Ramanuja Acharya's wife, she took the food on the banana plate and she gave it to a Sudra woman. And then she cleaned up everything and she started to cook again. And then Ramanuja came. He said, "Has Kanchipurna come yet?" She said, "Yes, he has come and he has gone." And Ramanuja said, "Then why are you cooking again?" She said, "Because..." He said, "Where is his Mahaprasad? Where is the food that he has eaten?" She said, "I gave it to a Sudra lady, everything that I prepared for him. Now I'm preparing everything for you." Ramanuja said, "Why have you done like this?" She said, "You are a first-class Brahmin. You are my husband. How can I give you the remnants of a Sudra?" This was like a lightning bolt that struck Ramanuja's heart. He felt so sad and distressed. He said, "My dear wife, do you not understand that you have just cheated me of being purified by the remnants of a pure Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord? There's no question of high birth or low birth in the devotion to God." So Ramanuja, he was very much distressed at hearing this. At that time, Ramanuja, he also indicated to Kanchipurna, he asked him to initiate him and accept him as his disciple. So Kanchipurna went to Bardraj and began to speak, deity of Krishna. He said, "What is this? I'm just a simple devotee. I'm just a simple person. I just want to chant for you. I just want to dance for you. I simply want to be fan you and do nice service for you. And now this high-class, educated Brahmin, he wants to massage and wash my feet. He wants to give me honor. If he gives me honor, the whole world will give me honor. He wants to be my disciple. These things are so much of a disturbance, Bharadrajji. Please let me go away. I would like to go to Tirupati." So the deity of Krishna said, all right, you go to Tirupati. So he left. And he was away for 6 months. And one day, Varadraj appeared to him in a dream and said, no one has been fanning me for 6 months. I'm feeling very hot. You should come back. So he came back. And Ramanuja was very happy that he came back. And again, they sat together and they would just discuss Krishna. Ramanuja was saying, I am starving for the last 6 months without your association. So it is described that one day, a Brahmin came to the house of Ramanujacharya. Ramanuja was not in. And he came with his begging bowl, begging from his wife. And his wife became very angry. Why don't you get a job? What kind of Brahmin are you? Begging. He said, get away, I'm not going to give you any food. So he was feeling very sad and dejected. And as he was walking by, Ramanuja saw him. So what is wrong? Did you go to him? He said, I have just gone to your house. Ramanuja saw that the Brahmin looked very undernourished, very hungry, and very sad. He said, I simply begged your wife for something, and she chastised me, told me that I'm a parasite, I should get a job, I should go away, she had nothing for me. Ramanuja, he said, you go back to my wife. And then he wrote a letter. He said, tell her that you are a messenger of her father. So Ramanuja wrote a letter. And on this letter he wrote, it was a letter addressed to Ramanuja. It said, my dear son, my second daughter is about to get married, and my old wife, she cannot properly attend to all the guests that will be coming for the reception. So please kindly send your wife to help my daughter. So he said, all right, you give this letter to my wife. So he gave the letter to the wife. And when this Brahmin said, I am a messenger of your father, and gave the letter, then she immediately started giving him nice prasad. After all, you have come from my father's side. Very nice. You are a very great man. So Ramanuja came home, and his wife greeted him very warmly. And she showed him the letter. And Ramanuja told her that, I have urgent business. I will not be able to go now. I may come later. But you should go immediately. So she packed all her things and made herself very nice, and she went. As soon as she went and she was out of sight, he went to the temple of Varadraj, and he said, Varadraj, I want to just surrender everything to you. How can I live with someone who is making all these discriminations? This is a beggar. This is a low class. This is a high class. He said, I simply want to live for the welfare of all living beings. And then he took his cloth and dyed it saffron. He got new cloth and dyed it saffron. And he started a sacred fire. And then Kanchipurna came, and Kanchipurna initiated him in sannyas and gave him the name Yatiraj. And then he left that place and began preaching all over India with no discrimination. Simply giving the mercy of Krishna to everyone, anyone who would simply accept it. It is described that the mercy of Krishna is like the sun. The sun does not discriminate whether you are from this family, this nationality or that nationality. The sun's rays are beneficially giving itself to everyone. But if you hide in a cave, that is your own misfortune. And those devotees who are representing the Lord, they are like mirrors of the sun, of Krishna's mercy. They are reflecting the divine mercy of the Lord in all directions to anyone who will simply accept it. And what is the problem in this world? There is a problem that such great souls are so rare to find. Everyone is so much succumbing to pursuing their own petty little selfish ambitions in life that they are missing the whole point of human civilization, which is to act as a servant of God for the welfare of all living things. And you should know, until you accept that principle as your life, you will never find real happiness. The more you take, the less you have. The more you give, the more you have. This is a spiritual principle. Of course, if you have nothing, what do you have to give? Huh? So therefore, a devotee is very serious about his own spiritual life. And Prabhupada is explaining here that the class of men, often called yogis, oftentimes they are very, very strict in their spiritual principles for their own spiritual advancement. But the great devotees of the Lord, they have a very opposite way of viewing. They do not want to practice sadhana or Krishna consciousness for their own spiritual advancement. They will be very, very attentive and very intense in their execution of devotional service so that they can make spiritual advancement. Why? Because the more advancement they make, the more they can give to others. They do not want to keep anything for themselves. That is the symptom of a great soul. And Krishna says in the Gita, there is no one more dear to me than those who sacrifice and risk everything for the sake of others. Bhagavatam also explains this. Nor will there ever be someone so dear to me as that. So first of all, we must know that in our own life, our real happiness is not in chasing the temporary illusions of this world, but in finding true peace in the self. But that is not enough. Because the real happiness of that peace is in distributing it to others according to our capacity. According to what we have and what we can do, we should live for the welfare of others. If I have a good intelligence, I should use my good intelligence to elevate others in devotion to God. If I have a strong body, I should use my strong body under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master to elevate others in devotion to God. If I have wealth, if I have prestige, we should use these things for the elevation of all other living beings. This is the greatest service to God. And this, according to Bhagavat, is the only platform of real peace. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshije ahoit ki aprati hata yajatma supraseedati. The supreme occupation for all humanity is unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Lord and to all of God's children. Only such a state of consciousness can completely satisfy the self. So this Krishna consciousness movement, which is the movement of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such great souls as Srila Prabhupada, living according to this divine principle. And Lord Chaitanya especially urged the people of India to accept this principle. भारत भूमि ते होयला मनुष्य जन्म जा जन्म सार्थक कारी खार फार उपकार. That those people who are born in India, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, especially because they have been given so much, they have been given the highest facility and opportunity for divine consciousness. They should live to spread the message of Krishna all over the world for the welfare of everyone. And according to God, this is the duty of every man, woman, and child born in this land of India. Para dukha dukha, para upakar. To live for the supreme benefit of all living beings. So if we take this principle to heart, we should know that we are most fortunate. The more people we make fortunate, we become fortunate. Huh? This is spiritual mathematics. The more you give, the more you have. And how to give? It is very simple. You do not have to become sannyasi. You do not even have to become an orator of the Bhagavad Gita. Just according to your capacity, you assist those great sadhus who are making this high welfare service to humanity, their life and soul. In any way you assist them, that is your greatest fortune. That is the greatest contribution. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings, both in their happiness and distress, O Arjuna. Is there any questions? Yes.
What did you mean the first thing you said, like, do not do to others what you do not tell others?
That means you should be thinking in terms of the well-wisher and the friend of others. Do you like other people talking behind your back? Huh? So you should not talk behind anyone else's back. Do you like other people cheating you? So you should not cheat another. Ahimsa doesn't simply mean physical abuse. It means abuse on a level of body, mind, or soul. Huh? You should be the friend of all living beings. Yes.
There seems to be a gap between what one is intellectually understood and what one really experiences. Intellectually, I am convinced that one should have this friendly, loving attitude for all living beings.
Mm.
But in practice, it doesn't manifest like that.
Mm.
Why is the gap?
It begins with the intellectual understanding. But then you have to practice according to the instructions of the Guru, the Sadhu, and the Shastras in order to develop the experience. And it's like I can tell you how nice Vrindavan is. Huh? And you can have an intellectual understanding of how nice Vrindavan is. But then, do you have the experience until you go there? Now, how to get there? It's not that you just sit there and intellectually understand it. That will not pay your ticket, right? You have to do what is required under the direction of someone who knows Vrindavan. How to get there? Then when you get there, then you will experience. So we are explaining this divine state of selfless consciousness, pure loving consciousness toward Krishna. But to experience it, you have to follow the process. First, you have to be convinced. And with that conviction, you chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You follow the four regulative principles. You associate with devotees. And you help in the service of the great souls. You become the servant of the servant, and gradually that experience will manifest within your life. Thank you.